Good morning, everyone.
Morning, Larry.
Please join me in the opening prayer. I think what we'll do is we'll say it all together. I think last time we had trouble doing it any other way. So share it with me. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, beloved Jesus Christ, blessed Master, dearest Mother, beloved David, saints and sages of all religions, I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles and give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple. Make my heart thy altar. Make my love thy home. Be thou the only King reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Our Bible reading this morning is from St. John chapter 12, starting with verse 23. And Jesus answered them, saying, "The hour is come that the Son of God, that the Son of Man should be glorified. Verily, verily, I say unto you, except a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abideth alone. But if it die, it bringeth forth much fruit. He that loved his life shall lose it, and he that hates his life in this world shall keep it unto life eternal. If any man serve me, let him follow me, and where I am, there shall also my servant be. If any man serve me, him will my Father honor." And we have this new book from Cross and Lowe's Publishing. And it's called Climbing the Sacred Mountain. It's Poems and Prayers of a Western Yogi as a subtitle. And it's all David's writings from many different sources. And Ruth did the editing and the commentary on this. I'm going to read you just one piece. This is on page 260. Crushing of the Old Cup. Here's Ruth's commentary. Written at Anandashram as Carla was going through intensive experiences of the mystical crucifixion, the depth of these experiences and their effect on us cannot be truly known except by those who have gone through them. The heights one may know may be realized only by one who has experienced the resurrection that comes afterward. During this time, Carla had a death mask that comes at a certain stage. The workings of the Kundalini during this stage is as the destroyer. It destroys the ego nature, and to the degree we identify with the body and its relationship to the world, we feel we are being destroyed as well. This is the pain that will end all pains. With the crushing of the old cup of consciousness comes the promise of a new cup, or as Jesus said it, a new wineskin. But during this experience, the new cup cannot be known, so only childlike trust can take one forward at this time. And then here's David's poem called A New Cup. What wondrous power awakens deep within my being, a power to change, a power to transform. O mystic power of Kundalini, so much promise lies in your awakening. So little does the pilgrim know. What torturous paths lead to that promise? For your power is destruction and creation. And first you must destroy to rid the consciousness of error and ego, to empty the cup of old wine. That emptying means the crushing of the cup, and of all that remains of the past, becoming rid of all we cling to, as a dying person clings to every breath. The crushing grinds to white all the stain of error-ridden past, and breaks our grip of cherished notions of old. So thoroughly do you destroy that I have nothing to claim as my own, and if I and mine raise objection, your heavy grinding stone works it to dust. On goes your work, heedless of puny human groans, for your work is divine, and so your need transcends the little I. But your work is not merciless, and if in pain I cry out, you give comfort, strength, and aid to continue such a mighty work. O divine Kundalini, you are not the goal but the answer to it. But what a fantastic journey you embark us on to attain our goal divine. What will be the end? One cannot tell. But in faith and child trust, I follow where you lead. In gratitude, I bow to you, the worker of change and transformation. In your work lies the pain to end all pain. In your work lies ultimate freedom. So continue on in your work till all is ground to finest dust, to make a new cup of purest gold, to be filled with holy wine of Spirit alone. So I want to talk this morning a little bit, at request one of the devotees, about David. And it makes the most sense to talk about what, when I first met him and what I know about his life. I first met him in 1976, as I've written before about, and but didn't really take notice of him nor become friends with him and any, you know, extracurricular, shall we call it, things until I was at Mother's apartment and around Christmas season later that year. My mother had invited us all there. And this was the time when David was called out by Mother about him saying, you know, not making... If you don't know the story, I guess I should tell it. David's so self-deprecating. It's not the story I would tell myself knowing it. Also, it didn't affect me the same way it did David. I don't remember it being that startling. I did remember Mother, because Mother was, it was rarely done, but Mother was very hard on some people, and she could be hard on individuals at different times. And for Mother, this is the only time I ever heard her speak harshly at David. But Mother went, showed him in the back. Now, for the background, Mother took David, while the rest of us were there, into the back rooms where her bedrooms were and her office. And in her condominium on, the 28th Avenue, around 123rd block of 28th Avenue Northeast. And so... In that, when she went to the office, she showed him a mistake she'd made, and who knows why she did this, but she showed him a mistake she'd made in her checkbook and was chuckling about it. And they came out, Mother said something to Wilmer, who was taking pictures, to make a perfect picture. Don't make any mistakes. Make each perfect picture, each picture perfect. Excuse me. And David decided to question Mother. Mother, you just showed me, what do you mean by perfection? What do you just showed me, what a mistake you made in your checkbook? And instead of answering that particular question, she just said, one does not talk about your guru that way. And that he says he just turned white and realized as a mistake immediately that he'd been set up by God. But from my perspective, I just remember being jealous of him. Why was she singling him out, you know, because this is the kind of competitive stuff you see children around their mother and their father trying to get their attention. So it's funny to hear him many years later tell the experience that he had, because we never talked about it in the intervening years. So from that point, I still didn't spend much time with him. I would talk with him outside Bonnie's house or maybe in the back room at different holiday events. Not many memories of that. He had a beard then. And Mother, he thought Mother wanted him to shave his beard, but she just kind of touched it and he trimmed it so it wasn't so shaggy. I remember him talking about that. I don't remember him being really shaggy. And because I think that was in the time before. David had been with Mother for 2 years by that time, when I came on board. And then in 78, David brought a friend from school, Michael McCurley, and he that just catalyzed several of us, because we started going out to breakfast and spending time with Michael, and Michael was just this kind of personality who wanted to get to know all of us and just talk about all these things. And so at that point on, it kind of became the monks, Mother's monks, he called us. Several of us, and Michael had the gumption to ask Mother out to lunch with us. David and I probably would never have got up the courage to ask her, nor would we know how to do it in a way that we weren't uncomfortable. Whereas Michael made people relax. He just had that effect. And Mother really admired him and really spent a lot of time on him and gave him a lot of attention. And she liked that kind of personality. I think she was, to a certain extent, she was like that herself. Maybe not as bombastic, perhaps, but she was certainly an outgoing person, and she was willing to step into to things. But either way, she knew that that reflected a spiritual potential, too. You need someone who's not a Casper milquetoast to do this kind of work. And so those years proceeded along. We all got married, and things changed. We talked a lot about Mother's life. We talked a lot about Papa and Master, about SRF and the books that we all read. Meher Baba was one book we had read about and read things about him. But certainly David really pushed Sri Ramakrishna's book, The Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, by M. Master Mahasaya. And he really liked that. For some reason, I didn't read it at that time. I was busy reading other spiritual books, mostly Papa's stuff. But I do remember those times when we talked about every detail. We had friends who were kind of atheists. We talked with them and discussed, you know, our own experiences. I remember a good friend of mine I met from university, engineering mind, and fairly, not, I guess I shouldn't say rigid, but fairly intellectual for certain. And he met Mother. He finally got talked into coming to meet her because he was curious about her. And he didn't ever go back. And I brought a few people. I'd say majority didn't stay. But the thing that really happened that we all noticed, and we didn't bring up with Jim. His name is Jim. You know, to point it out to him. But at that point, he said to me. So I think that same day, he said, one thing I did like is that she hugged everybody. And she said, I'm going to start hugging everybody. And from that point on, we all hugged whenever he would want to come through and hug everybody who was there when we meet at my house or meet in other kind of places. And that continued for years later. He was always wanting to hug everybody. So Mother has these funny gifts that she gives people that they, and it's done completely. I mean, Mother was so good at hiding who she was and what she was doing to the people who weren't hers. She didn't, as far as we know, in this lifetime anyway, she didn't see as her disciples and didn't draw them in. Who knows? You know, these events, and we have to take the perspective of many lifetimes here, and so I suspect many people who just touched on Mother and maybe didn't like her or did like her but never stayed with her and everything in between, that they were, these are high souls, that you don't get to meet a teacher of Mother's stature accidentally. So David was always Mother, during those late 70s when I was there, 76 through 80, 81, before, in 80, 1981 or so, we moved over to the to the Congregational Church on 27th, just a few blocks north of where Mother's apartment was. And so during those years, Mother used to do what she did, what she called questions and answers. These are things that she had done a lot in the 60s. And I know this now because I've been working through Mother's 1960s tapes and getting them converted to MP3s and putting on the websites and having available for transcriptions, mostly is what we're doing. And she would do questions and answers through the times when I was there too, but not very many. And David was almost always singled out, almost. And you know, he didn't object to it. He took it seriously. But I think I was afraid she would call on me, and she didn't because of that. David didn't have that, or he maybe was. I know he kind of mentioned a couple times that it was difficult when she started the questions and answers, because we pointed out to each other that, you know, she seems to always call on you. I think it shows up in the transcripts and the talks. Whenever she almost, I won't say always, but she called on him a lot, and she certainly called on him more than anyone else. I think that can be borne through the looking through the transcripts and the listening to the talks. And in that way, she was preparing him. It's strange to think that we had lay ministers and people who were ministers eventually two ordained ministers who kind of fell by the wayside, and David was brought in the back door. And I shouldn't say back door because it was done up front, but it's just like he was a lesser. She ordained him or brought him in as lay minister while she ordained Keith, for instance. And that was just a way of introducing him without. Mother liked to talk about not bringing the opposing spirit, the opposing force into too much relief, or not bringing too much attention to yourself, because the opposing force takes note and starts work harder on that. My mom always said that that the devil relies on the world, the flesh, and the devil. And the world and the flesh take most care of most of us, and the devil just works on the hard cases. So Mother knew that this opposing force would come out more strongly. And it, of course, in that sense, I know that we always think of a particular person as though this devil has a personhood. Papa tries to dissuade us from that. Mother and Master, not so much. They often talk about the devil. And Mother said that, you know, you must resist him, but also that you must not pay attention to him. And so resist the devil and he shall flee, and resist not evil were two things that she talked about a lot. But she was dealing, as they all masters do, with the opposing force that rises up inside yourself and rises up amongst the people you're helping, you're working with. Someone takes on the role of Judas on the extreme, but every disciple will bring something up in the opposing level. Even her mother said that her husband, Father Hamilton, played the opposing force many times. So we don't need to pick on any particular person. And in Jesus' case, why he chose Judas, I think it really does represent the symbology of the 12 disciples are aspects of himself, of the self, I should say, in human incarnation. And so there is an element of us, there's a Judas element of us, that is chosen to do the things required to make the test worthwhile. I've always said that when you are building anything, like I've done a lot of structures over the years, and one of the things you do when you first put a structure up, and the first few sticks, the first few arches or whatever frames you put up, you tend to shake them. You actually literally, these carpenters always do this, almost everyone does this in any structural sense. You just to get a feeling for it, you actually put your hand on it and grab it, and you shake it back and forth, make sure it's connected to the ground and to the stakes that are in the ground and to the piece being supported. And this is necessary that things be tested. Mother had to know with David. I think she chose very early on. I think she brought him in and she knew from the beginning that he would be her successor. But she knew not to make that point to him and have his ego grow. So she didn't do it early on. And she put him through many experiences. And actually, many of us went through a whole, you know, so many people were going through experiences. One of the problems with this particular path is that there's a kind of a comparison of who's having experiences and who's not. And one person was a layminster and later a minister was. People criticized that he had not gone through many experiences of the Kundalini or different other higher experiences. And Mother said this person was had been through this many of these experiences in a previous lifetime and was prepared to educate and to teach on this level. So, you know, this is a mystery to us, but it is the truth that we know that some people come already preternaturally available and able to move into the highest, and there's a familiarity with these experiences too, that we all, once we've been there, we, even if it's been another lifetime or lifetimes ago, we do have familiarity with this. And I think that's what really pulls us onto the path, is that recognition of the spirit and the familiarity of the experience, because we really want to have that experience. We really want to complete it. It's the mysterious door that we call our destiny, and we should always hearken to things that are associated with our destiny. And we can think of it in a very heroic form if you want. In fact, I think it's good to think of it in heroic terms. To imagine it as clearly as you can. It has to be a step that you can make. Certainly, it has to be within your grasp or just beyond your grasp, or at least in the doorway as we're looking forward. And it, we should always follow that. So having a high heroic idea for yourself is a very good thing for yourself. But the only problem, of course, is that the ego likes that idea too. So anyway, Mother prepared David the way that she did. The rest is history. He measured up and then some. I mean, we all know, many of us do anyway, what a tremendous, tremendous thing he did, what he came through. But let me tell you a little bit about what this particular path and Mother's particular line has to deal with. And nothing I'm saying here couldn't be said about other people's paths. They would be able to relate to this. But since I've been close to this path, I know a lot about it. And so I think, I really in my own mind go back to Mother's life when she met her husband and was going to get married. And he lost the use of both his arms in an electrical accident. And she still married him. And I believe it happened before. My memory is that it happened before, just before they got married, and she still chose to marry him and have three children and go to school, I mean, and go to work for herself to raise the family that they brought into the world. I'm not sure if the video will be available later, but the audio will. But since the video is available now, I can show you. I think you can see. This is a copper drinking water
canteen.
And that Peter and Laura made for us. And they wrapped it in kind of a felt and sewed it together and put the wording, dedicated to the realization of God and service to Him in all forms. That's what David and Mother have always promoted. And a beautiful a representation of the cross and lotus. So it's very nice. And copper's good for you, evidently. Copper, silver, and gold. So Mother went through the depression. Very difficult time. Many times of waiting. Much. We all think that we have to wait too long for so many things in the spiritual path, and it seems to be part of the path. We all read about people who get brought right in, and those are thrilling things. Master's life was particularly that way, yet he really felt so much that he had to wait for things to happen. He was so anxious to move forward, and a soul of his stature knew that he wasn't living with the full ability within his spiritual self to represent it or to express it. And so, he still went through many years. Many years of pining to go to the mountains and pining to meet gurus. And then when he met his own master, he still had 10 years to go before he was sent to America. And his initial 4 years, he had to go to college, which is the last thing in the world he wanted to do. So we're all paying that kind of a price. We're all kind of waiting. And so we think, and many people will tell us, if you were just working a little harder back then, you could have gotten here sooner. And that's it's certainly true in my own life, and it's certainly true in general, that pressure has to be kept up on you. But there is a destiny, there is a logic to what we're going through destiny-wise. So she went through many years. She wasn't until the late 40s that she was a center leader for Master, and she met him in 1925. And that was all. Then she had to go through the depression, as I say, in late 40s through World War II, that generation. And then she's made a minister and given the title the next year as of a Yogacharya, which was just all that waiting, you know, much happened quickly. And then after Master's passing, and then after Rajasi's passing especially, in 55, so 3 years later, Mother was back into a waiting period, wondering, well, what do I do next? What does Master thinking is best for me. She knew she had an ability to form her own organization. I don't think it was even in the cards or even in her thoughts to do so, but I'm saying Master made it clear to her that she had the new order of a new dispensation of SRF in the wording and lettering in a letter that sent to her. So what does she do with that? In 1956, Mother had a really up and down time. Now, 1954, of course, she did some traveling, and she had great experience of the Nirvikalpa Samadhi in 1954, and also a trip with many wonderful experiences and going through so much. So much so that when she went to the ashram, she thought that she had already gone through the crucifixion, because they were crucifixion-like experiences up until that point. We all know Mother's talks, in which she talks about her own crucifixion experiences in India in 1958, starting in 1958. Although she got to the ashram in 57, Papa didn't really launch her into the experience until February 24th of 1958. But remember, if you read the Gospel of Swami Ramdas, she's asking Papa then what state she was in, because she felt what she had gone through already was a result of her own guru, her own master. I think she even said that was all her own, working out the karma of her own soul in this lifetime, for the individual soul. And then what she went through in India was was a universal, experience. And so she gets back from 1958, and she has 2 years, excruciating years of, well, for one thing, tremendous doubt about Papa. We don't realize how hard that would have been to look back on and to experience herself. She really did, it was between the two forces. She just did not know what she had experienced. I think her family members, it's funny, I always meant to interview them more closely and never did do that yet. There's still, I think Walter, Billy's husband, is still alive. And Barbara is still alive. But we did interview Barbara, and it's a pretty interesting conversation. And she probably gave me the most clues that I presently have, and also looking at some video and some other pictures of that time. Mother would go down to the beach with them, with the family, just between 58 and 60 when she started coming out of it. And she would just sit and stare, or sit and look down, and wouldn't talk to anyone. She was completely withdrawn. All the family must have thought, we just can't, it's always easy to think, I wouldn't have been the person who had thought poorly of her. She was not, I don't know if she was difficult to be around, but she was certainly difficult to pull a conversation from, evidently. And then 1960, she starts the slow slog, and one of the great things that happened to her at that time was the realization that Papa was this great person in her life, and that she completely turned the corner on any doubts associated with him, and recognized what a tremendous amount he gave to her at great expense to himself. And she always emphasized how much it affected him to do what he did for her. If you look at the Gospel of Swami Ramdas, you'll notice there's many people talked about, and besides Mataji and maybe Swamiji, Mother really, although it's at the end of the book, there's page after page of discussion of Mother's, what's going on with Mother and Father Hamilton. We know from Swami Sachidananda that he was told, after Mother started her experiences in February of 58, the gospel stops. Now, it continues on, but basically stops. And Papa told Swamiji not to do any more, that this was Mother's story to tell, and not write any more down after that. So there were other books in which people took notes of Papa's travels and stuff, but nothing quite like the Gospel. By the time David came to her, Mother, we now know that, and I'm pretty confident in this now, that Mother dated everything back to 1964 with her experience of Nirvikalpa Samadhi. I think that, you know, in that experience, she was told Papa would come. Anyway, God told her, I will come to meet you face to face. And that when she met Papa, it was like a realization. It was a few days into this, but it finally came clear to her that this was God himself come to meet her. So, sixteen years later, she always said it took 16 years. That was 1970. And that's when she started talks in Bonnie's house. Phil and Jean Anderson's house in Mercer Island was used for several years there. And they finally had something come up all of a sudden. And we have now the audio where Bonnie offers her house to Jean Anderson. So it's kind of thrilling. Bonnie says, well, yeah, for a little bit while we decide what to do. Well, of course, it was 10 years between 1970 and 1980 that we were at Bonnie's house. So by the time... excuse me. By the time that David came in 1974 to meet Mother, Mother was, as I knew her too, my gosh, you know, it's just hard to describe. She was a power, such a tremendous effect on you personally. And the best way to explain it, and David explains it beautifully in many ways, but it is that each time I would go, and many people talked about this, I would in the preceding week, or we would meet twice a week in those days, Wednesdays at 8 o'clock and Sundays at 11. 11 a.m. We would go in there during the preceding days before each talk. Almost all of us would have questions in our mind come up. And it was, now there's a twofold thing that happened in Mother's presence. One is that she would often answer in her sermon. And this explains why her sermons often seem disjointed. She was reading all of us all the time, and she was answering and responding to all of the people as need required. And so you'll see her start on a subject and just break away onto another subject very quickly. People afterwards will say, she answered exactly what I had been thinking. And, no, but here's this twofold aspect. During the time when you're there, the question out in your own mind goes away. You just seem like any questions you had didn't seem important. I swear to you that this was the experience of being around a saint, and it was this way with Swami Satchidananda. I think we all felt that so strongly. We mostly, and we expressed it this way, we just wanted to go with on a Swami walk or to be in, have his darshan. So we think this darshan is just viewing people, viewing somebody. But to be in their presence is transformative. And you just can't hear it often enough from devotees without wanting to have an experience yourself if you haven't had it. Because it is literally something that cannot be described. And it doesn't that way for all people. So, you know, many are called, but few are chosen. And it really comes down to that. Many do come, and they are called. And then Mother, for some mysterious reason or in some mysterious way, that God worked through her, took each soul that she wanted and released or allowed back into the wild those that... and we can't say they're not worthy. We just can't say anything about them. We don't know. Some souls only needed to meet Mother once and to have all the things that they needed for this lifetime. So it is those who are chosen. They are chosen not because of any great achievement on their own or any great character, but the needs of the service, based on what Mother needed. But in David's case, I think that was very different. I think Mother was very happy. She knew that she would have to pay a price to complete this next phase. And I remember in 1981 that she, as she was going out to the South Sea, she said many times, but before that, but she was saying just before she left, she doesn't know why she's going, and that she feels like she's entering into a dark tunnel, but that there's a little speck of light at the very end of the tunnel It was an odd thing for Mother to say, because she'd been through so much, and we didn't know where this was going to go. So it went the way that it went. We all know some of these stories. Mother really never had that that radiance that attracted people as greatly, although it is amazing to listen to her sermons and say, so from about 83, I've pretty much pinned it down to about January of 83, to maybe 85 or so, she's really in a very dark place, and in a nursing home, and then being taken care of in people's homes, enacting in a way that was hard to, repeating herself a lot, just difficult things of age, of a person who's aging. Yet you listen to some of the talks in 85 and then 86, 87, 88, and you see, although Mother's voice was weaker, there's the same soul peeking out from that. And one thing it did is it cleared the decks for David, for David's work. He was the undisputed receiver of all of Mother's in her will. She willed everything of a spiritual nature to him, and she gave him, and she said this several times in all of the devotees you knew who directly knew Mother, you heard it, she said, I will give David my mantle. Now gurus don't often do this. In India, maybe more than, but Master didn't. At least, as far as I know, Rajasi clearly had the mantle. And then I think that was in preparation. She cleared the decks. Seems to be one thing she didn't want. That's why she didn't want an organization. She didn't want, the Church of Christian Yoga or the. She often called the Master's disciples in those days. She didn't want it encumbered with a name that is attacked, can be attacked. And David had many things to go through after her passing even. So that's the other thing that is necessary to tell about David, and similar to what's going on now, you know, in the sense that we had talks of Mothers to go to refer to, and Kate and I had talks. We would continue on even twice a week, but most of the time, at least Sundays, in our house, we listened to tapes of Mothers. Now, let's go back a little bit on that. We always wanted to listen to tapes of Mothers when she wasn't in town. And it just didn't happen very often. So after she passed, David and I went through all the tapes. And we found a tape player, and so we started listening to tapes from Mothers 70s and 60s. Making some plans. But David really did go through a very dark night from about 1992, a year after Mother's passing, until about 95 or 96. So no thought of giving Kriya, no thought of having disciples, actually. I think he just didn't know how that would take place. He didn't feel like he had anything to give during that time. So what was it like to be with him at that time? In many respects, it was fairly normal. There were some odd things, though. One thing that Carla reminded me of when she started coming over in 95 or 96 to our house at Peter's request or recommendation, and I had forgotten, is that David would sometimes be there, and often was there with us, listening to Mother's talks. I'd lead the prayer, or Kate would lead the prayer. We'd play a tape of Mother's, and then we'd have a social 10 or 15 minutes and proceed on with our day or our night. For some reason, that just strikes me hard, that he was there. I think because I see back now from what the stature of where he is now, and I recognize how difficult it was for him. And it just showed the state of his being. So we went, I went with him many times up to Canada. Seems like Canada was the place that drew David initially. And Mother had such an affection for Canadians. And, you know, when I knew her, she was spending of her travel time. She mostly went to Canada. She would go to California a few times in Denver. But she regularly went up to Canada. Victoria, Courtney. And David's work started. There was a lot going on here too, but it was his openness and to address the needs of disciples that brought him out of it. I think it just really, you have to be called into it. And he wasn't in a salesman mode. Nothing wrong with that. Master had a different thing to do. Master always said that if Wrigley's gum can advertise, why can't we? And that's so true. But Mother, of course, forbade us from doing so and from forming an organization or charging for any spiritual services. And it wasn't in David's nature anyway. So it grew organically. I think slowly people realized, especially that first Kriya in 96, I think the people who had the eyes to see could really see that this was something. There was a great deal of focus on Mother in those days. And so many, many respects, it was seen as another Kriya initiation of the type that Mother gave, large groups. One Kriya for all people. Instead of, David later gave individual Kriya initiation, so he changed things dramatically towards his middle years and end years. But that was a passing on of the formal way of Mother doing things, and then David taking on his own way of doing it. And of course, part and parcel of that is him going to Cloud Mountain. He quit going to work. He wanted to quit. He was down at, as you know, all know, he was down in San Diego at Prem and Sheila's house, at Bajan. And sitting in the back, and he said that God told him, you have to quit your job and come to work for me. So that was in 97. 98, we all went to India. 99. There's a tremendous growth, and a lot of people had tremendous spiritual growth and much going on in that regard. 2000, September 9th. I always thought it was interesting that when David came out of, so I'll tell it this way, I don't remember the details, but I remember the day that David stopped speaking when we went down to Cloud Mountain that first day. Was a Sunday. And I believe it was the 9th of September 2000, and that he was one day short of a full year. And my weird mind always, I never said anything to him, but it bothered me. And it says more about me than it does about him. But I shouldn't say it bothered me, but I was bemused is better, because I really had no judgment on it. He'd already attained the impossible. And then in September 9th, he came out of Cloud Mountain. Let's see, is that true? So I guess the 8th, anyway, whatever day it was, because I know that the next day he gave a talk here in Seattle. And then 2 days after that, we had 9/11 to live through. Very interesting. But that experience at Cloud Mountain was, you know, during that time I got several emails from him that were reflective of what he was going through. And towards the end, all of his emails were of a type that were like what he was, more like him the rest of his life. And it was almost no interest in the outer world, any goings on in the outer world, although he talked about all those things, but in his writings and spiritual teachings, there was no interest in the outer world. It was all in the inner world and the spiritual practice. And that's what was evident in his later months at the Cloud Mountain. Then he got married. That decision was made while he was at Cloud Mountain. Carl had given such exemplary service, and she was the kind of person he knew was able to do work for him in such a way that she wasn't a burden on him. And that's important for what he was going through at that time, especially. He could rely on her, and there was no expectation from her. But because I think it's funny that people think, you know, the Swami model and the priest model, the Catholic priest model, would be to be celibate the rest of your life, and that's the measure of spiritual attainment. And it certainly, there is truth to that. It's a complicated story, but he recognized it wasn't fair for Carla to be run to moving so closely with her, and it affected the work. He needed someone like that, and he always had. Well, I think spiritual path just brings women to the fore anyway, but you need both, obviously. But this kind of a role where you can support somebody. There's another thing too. David, really, we often talked about, because he'd already been married, and we often talked about the householder path being something the mother brought, with full recognition of the monastic path. Nobody would take any of that away from this. It was just that there are two paths in Lahir Maharshi, thank goodness. I mean, because it wasn't just a throwaway line of one of the gurus in our line, as that it's okay, but rather that it is a noble way to attain God. Sri Ramakrishna, I've been reading a lot about him lately, and reading his biography, the new one that's out, that was a direct word-for-word translation, very interesting, very good. He said that householders have some advantages, monastics have some advantages, but householders also have advantages, and both paths are worthy. But I think that was strong on his mind, that he wanted to support so many of his own disciples from that time were married, and he didn't also, I don't think he had any notion of wanting to start an ashram or have a monastic line started. It just wasn't within his purview of the things he had to do, of how he saw things. I just recently described a dream that I had, a spiritual dream, to a devotee, and I'll give you an idea of what I felt, and I've had many experiences now in the astral realm, and this was a dream that kind of started me to recognize what that world was like, and it was more to the story than what I wrote. There was a prompting came from a friend of mine who was with a teacher here in the Seattle area. And it's a complicated story, but that master had passed on. And in my dream, that master was meeting Mother. And he had his own disciples. So that was the context of the dream. I believe parking the car or something like that, even though it was so unworldly that it was, all of these things fell away later. But I was doing something, and I came late to Mother already being settled in the grounds, with a lot of her students were there. And then this other master that was this person that I had met, a guru, in Seattle here. And he had a tremendous, you just have to see the bright faces. Most of them were black. Mother's group had a smattering of black people in her group. And Mother's group was thousands of people. And we were all on the green rolling hills with trees and small habitations built into the ground, big buildings, but still, and grand, huge trees. And there was so much excitement in the air, and there was no stress. It was so relaxed. Every person I met, practically, I knew. And whether I did or not, I just felt like I did. And that's the experience, of course. We've heard this about the astral world, that we meet people that we've known many, many lifetimes. And we know them. We recognize them. That happens in this lifetime. We'll meet people that we are very comfortable with and we know them. And that's because of that same recognition. But in the astral realm, you have a lightening of the burden on the mind and the mind's ability to use the memory. However it's stored. Big mystery there. And so I came down, and Mother had already been set up in the bottom of this valley. It wasn't deep. It was just that it was so many contoured hills, and people were spread out all talking. And I sat down and was just about to have my lunch, and a man came running up, a young man came running up and said, Mother wanted to see me right away. So myself, I felt really quite overjoyed that she wanted to see me, because during this time the protocol was clear. We all knew that the people who were the guests, the Southern Master and his disciples, had priority, and they were all seated around Mother, mostly just looking at her, and that people were asking questions of her. But so I went down and rounded the hill, and there was Mother sitting ensconced, quite happily. A sight I thought I'd never see. I'd never see anything like it. And she beamed a smile at me, and I woke up as I came around the corner. So that's the realm that I created in astral understanding of what it's like to be in Mother's presence. Mother has the keys to all the realms. She can move just as easily in the causal plane and above. And so I've never had anything quite like that with David. I know some of you have had many wonderful experiences. I've felt him talk to me. It seems like about 10 years ago or 15 years ago, he and I got into a way of working with each other where we never could criticize each other. For me, that was pretty easy. I didn't have much to criticize. But he just let all of that stuff go. I think he was like that with many of us. I'm not saying that's... He became much softer in his later years. Jill keeps insisting that we talk of David in the present tense. And I think that's the correct way to think of him. I think you can call upon him in that way. He is here. And Mother is. So if there's any questions, by all means, let's open it up a little bit to comments or questions. And we'll see, since we just had this celebration of David's life and his Mahasamadhi the other day, this is what prompted someone to ask to have a talk today. So any questions or comments or remembrances of David would be nice to do. Did we lose everybody?
Larry?
Oh, yeah.
I'm just overwhelmingly thankful for today. I watched the clock, and I just prayed that you wouldn't stop at 12. Because every word was the most beautiful food. And I'm very appreciative, and I could relate to a lot. Right. Of what you said about Mother?
Yeah, I know you can, yeah.
Very, very, very beautiful. And it's interesting how you stopped with a dream, our beautiful Mother. And the last time you spoke, you stopped after you said the words, she was beyond belief. And that was it. You had nothing more because you could feel her so strongly.
That's right.
So all I have to say is thank you, Larry. I have a lot. I have a lot that I would love to share with you, but it's not necessary. So thank you.
You're very welcome. Yeah, Beyond Belief would be a good name for a book, wouldn't it? I think there's been a few already with that title. Yes.
You know, you said you didn't quite have that same thing with Mother as you did with David, or David as you did with Mother, you know, seeing that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was funny because I was super resistant to David as a spiritual teacher at first. I thought, I know this guy, he's an overall and a beard. You know, I grew up with him, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, I had a dream too, and Mother actually like handed me over to him. He's your teacher,
right.
You know. You take him, and once she said that, I couldn't, and then I could start to see who he was.
Wow! So, wonderful.
Those dreams are powerful, aren't they?
She pushed you over the hump, didn't she?
She did. Yeah.
I'd like to say something.
I always thought he was a nice guy, but
he actually died. It'll pick you up, but you can stand here.
Okay. Well, I'll just stand there. Yeah. I almost started saying something, Charmy, and you said something very similar to what I'm just standing beside Larry, you can't see me, what you were saying, that I really feel like is perhaps I've brought it up to many of you, but I think it's a good thing to say again today. I think because we knew David so well as a friend, that there was the time after Mother's passing that we could only see Mother, of course, because she was our guru. And it was like David was never going to measure up to that. So there's that resistance. And although I felt like when I had a spiritual problem, I would go to him. I knew that he was beyond the rest of us and that he was in a different category than the rest of us. But it wasn't, for me, like being around Mother. And it was interesting to see there were a few different occasions when all of a sudden I started to see that in him. When the first was when I was being somewhat resistant to some of whatever was happening, what he was saying or whatever. And I heard God say to me, or heard Mother say to me, actually, like those old movies where you have the person can't hear and they've got that big triangular thing they stick in the ear so that somebody can hear it. So that was placed in my ear in my vision. And Mother was saying, this is my beloved son in whom I'm well pleased. And I've told a number of you that story, but it really, then I thought, yes, that's what I have to see in him. and I stopped being as resistant. And then I started realizing, and it wasn't until after having been with Swami Satchidananda, and the thing that you realize when you're around a saint like that, and David has talked about it himself, is just that sweetness of their self, so that the body itself is so sweet and has a different, whole different quality than most people's. And so you just want to be there, and you just want to be looking at them, and you just want to follow after them. And in later years, and far after he really deserved that, I began to see that in David. And just that sweetness of being around him, that same quality that that Mother and Swamiji had, of just everything about his being so sweet and so powerful and all God. And that was when I finally was able to give him that full respect that he was due. And I don't know when that happened. Sometime in the 2000s. It was maybe a gradual process, but it certainly did. And it was David coming into that complete fullness of his own being that that I was able to see that. So I bow to that and all of you.
Very nice.
I'm just going to say a little tiny bit more, Larry. I was just going to say that God waited until I was ready before he brought me to David.
Mm-hmm.
And it was instant. I remember the first thing I said to him when I saw him after all, maybe 20 years, and he was getting out of the car at Loon Lake, and I said, "So that's what you look like." And I regretted saying it, you know, because that day he became God, and he became on the same level, the same stature as Mother.
Mm-hmm.
No question whatsoever, and I followed him everywhere I could be, and every chance I could get, because he and Mother were the same to me. Thank you.
Yeah.
I can follow up, Judy, with two different things that have come to mind. One was having been dear friends with David for a couple of years, from 89 to 91. And then Greg and I went traveling for 6 months, and I didn't see David. And the first time I saw him, he was in a breezeway that was dark. So very, very similar to a sepulcher kind of experience. It was concrete block. And it was dark behind him, and then he came, and I saw him but didn't recognize him, and then he came into the light. And had a new body that I didn't recognize immediately.
What year was that?
That was 91.
Yeah.
In June.
So after Mother's passing. Mm-hmm.
After Mother's passing. And then immediately when he was in the light, I recognized him. But his outline and his movement was not familiar to me.
Interesting.
Even though we had been 5 days a week together for 2 years before that.
Right.
He was wearing the mantle.
Yeah, that's what occurs to all of us, isn't it? That the mantle was passed, wasn't it?
Yeah. And so there, that experience, and then the one that has come to me, just a joyful experience, this last week, Greg and I were out swimming in the bay. And we often have a seal that comes up when we're kayaking, and it rings to mind when David was living in Kirkland. It was one of the unseasonably hot summer days, and we went down to Lake Washington, and just the two of us, and swam. And it was so wonderful and refreshing, and these two sea otters came, just or not sea otters, but river otters came to swim with us, and just kept coming back and forth, playing, getting within, we could reach out and touch them if they would have let us. That was how close they were. It was just this joyous, joyous day, and I can just be there in a moment, and how wonderful it was to just be with David in those just joyous small moments. How grateful I am for his existence in every way. And how each one, whether it was taking us to the heights in meditation or literally goofing off, that each one was filled with God. Each moment was filled with God.
Yeah.
I'm very grateful I am for a master that brought that into my life.
I'd like to say a little bit, Larry.
Oh, hey, Jerry.
First of all, I'm glad you mentioned Michael.
Yeah.
Because he was an important character in our lives.
Yeah, and you were part of that whole. You were part of that whole time, weren't you? That's right. Mm-hmm.
Yep. He certainly brought me into the circle.
Yeah.
Comfortably.
Yeah.
And introduced me to you and to
right.
Dave.
Right.
So I appreciate that. I think of him often.
Yeah.
And also what you said about Mother. Often I go to, well, I learned not to, but certainly in the early days, well, the very first time I sat down with Mother over dinner, she let me ask questions.
Right.
But frankly, after that, it seemed to me a useless practice to take questions because they all dissolve anyway. By the time we sat down around the table next to her, those questions were all solved.
Or they were answered, weren't they? Yeah, or they were, both things could happen, yeah.
Yep. And then for David and the passing of the mantle, I recall when Mother was still in the body, but she was having health issues.
Right.
Walking across campus with one of the devotees, and he expressed concern about what's going to happen when Mother leaves the body. To me, it just seemed so obvious. Well, David will take over.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had not heard anything about the passing of a mantle, but it just seemed so obvious to me that David would be the one.
Yeah, Mother left us in no doubt. She really did.
To me, it didn't make, it wasn't a question.
Right.
As to
she even gave him her title. He never used it until after her passing. That title was the only, I didn't even know about it until after her passing. And it was first used on the pamphlet we printed out for Mother's memorial service for her funeral. And he said,
the title?
Oh, no, I'm sorry, the Yogacharya title. Her left her title, Yogacharya.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which was a precious gift from Master. You know, that was something.
Right.
And, you know, I always liked the idea that it wasn't a name, which is always difficult for me. I don't think names are necessary, although she named her daughter Anandamata as when she ordained her. But Mother got given a title, and so did David. So. Yeah.
And then one other thing you mentioned about David towards the end of his time on the planet. Well, literally on the planet. was that he became more tender. And I noticed that too.
Yeah.
He could be brisk.
No, he could be. Yeah.
To get his point across, or to correct foolishness or whatever. I different things happened. But I noticed in that last 2 or 3 years, I kind of felt like I was being indulged like a small child.
That's kind of what I was expressing, yeah. Yeah.
I almost couldn't do any wrong. He seemed to embrace me regardless, and so gently and tenderly.
Yeah.
And he did do something for me when he left the body, but I haven't found language to talk about it, and so I'm just going to have to leave it there. It was quite a wonderful experience that he gifted me with.
Oh, that's nice.
Maybe one day I'll have a language that I can talk about that.
But, yeah. Yeah, please do.
I really appreciate this, Larry, what you've done here. This has been a wonderful... tapped into a lot of wonderful memories and awakened parts of me that I hadn't thought about for a while. I appreciate it.
Wasn't my doing, but yeah, I'm glad you did it.
Still, you had a choice. You could have said no. Maybe you couldn't.
Right.
A few more minutes.
Sure.
I met David probably in 72 when I was going to Auburn College. He was my roommate. And he introduced me to Mother. And, you know, it was a long, 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 long time before I actually knew what I had with the two of them. And, a couple of times David pinned me to the wall and said, don't tell any stories. Tell me what give me the answer. Not to tell stories and answer it. And then one time, I was coming back to Washington. I'm in Illinois. And, I was visiting my father. And since I figured that since my mother was gone, I should get as much time with him as I could. And, I guess I told David that I'd be there. And then I wrote him another one since I can't because I'm visiting my dad. And he sent me back a little email that sort of excoriated me a bit. Yeah. He says, well, you know, you're welcome to come any time. And he went on a little bit like that. And I didn't realize it, but I had this fear of just driving from Tacoma to Seattle. You know, some huge fear came up, kind of like a terror wall. And he sort of broke that. And I didn't realize that until... just then, and to have somebody to care about me, I didn't think that many people cared about me, you know, even to come pick me up at an airport or something.
Right.
And that was, I think, was pretty interesting, and even that, you know, when he passed on, he felt like he lifted something, but he had a couple other times about him visiting me. But it was a long time before I actually thought, realized that, oh, this guy knows something. And Mother, you know, it was a long, long time before I figured that Mother knew something other than just being a nice older woman that gave me hugs and gave me good advice.
Share something. I wasn't with Mother or David, but like being in Satchitananda's presence with all you guys, you know, all the questions dissolve, and it just feels, I definitely feel their grace, and of course it's all in God's consciousness. It's pouring through these beings and through all of you, so keep up the good work, and God bless you all.
There's a long line of with these lineages. They go way back and they continue into the future. There's places for everybody. A lot of work to do. Mother insisted this is a pioneering time. So. Zen master was the great, great pioneer.
It's the last stanza of a meditation before the cottage. It was given to me this morning. The last three stanzas of it are, love doesn't die, people do. So when all that's left of me is love, give me away.
What's that from, Jill?
It's from Meditations Before Kaddish. I can send you the whole. It's a Reformed Jewish liturgy.
I see.
As an optional reading before the Kaddish.
Which is what you say for people who have after passing, no?
Yes.
Well, thank you all for coming, and we'll try to do this more often in the future. Let's do our closing prayer together also. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of Thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet and surrender myself to Thee. I feel the power of Thy perfection surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence are radiant with Thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with Thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am here. Christ Guru.